Well, a very pleasant Tuesday, May 19th, to you. Seems like the weeks are taking a little longer than usual, doesn't it?
A little bit.
The month is flying by. We're more than halfway through May, but the weeks seem to take forever if it's only Tuesday.
It's weird how that works.
And weird how the weather works. We had a most incredible deluge, and now it's sunny and beautiful.
And I hear
last night.
Right. So
it was even worse.
Yeah, and yesterday started out the same way, where it was sunny and beautiful, and then we got storms. I think we might get more storms later on tonight as well. So
it's crazy. It is crazy. Thank God, and I do mean thank God, that we have been blessed by missing much of the bad weather, heck, the last few years that has been all around us. I mean bad weather. And we have been able to avoid that, mostly. All right, a lot going on. Front page of the Detroit News, teen violence challenges Detroit. Well, lucky for us, we have scheduled our conversation with Detroit Chief of Police Extraordinaire Todd Bettison. We'll talk directly to him about that kid being shot, about these problems and how parents are going to be held responsible for their minor children. When children become adults, then they're responsible for themselves. But if I were a parent of a young kid, I would pay attention to what the chief has to say, and he'll be coming up with us at about 1:18 or so this afternoon. We'll talk with Macomb County Executive Mark Hackle. As the U.S. House okays the bill with $162 million for the Selfridge Air Base upgrades, does it seem to me, or to you like it does to me, that it appears that this Selfridge thing has been approved, signed off on by everybody a couple of times?
Yeah, and I don't know if this is in addition to the money that we already knew about. Remember when Governor Whitmer was criticized for working with Trump?
I thought all this was a done deal.
And then I know that back when the state budget was up in the air, there was some funding there that was being held up as well. So maybe they're just getting a lot of money from a lot of different places, which is good. We need Selfridge in this area.
Oh, my God. We don't just need Selfridge. We are absolutely dependent on everything about Selfridge, not just America's security, but that's security for a lot of people who have jobs and are. It's an important aspect of our whole region, for goodness sakes. And there have been times it's been in question as to whether they were going to be continued and what was going to happen, but I thought we were beyond all of that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, I remember there were some retiring aircraft, and there was a couple of years that they swung and missed trying to get new aircraft to be housed there, and then they finally got one or two of them. So, yeah, we haven't talked to Mark Hackle in a while anyway, so I figured it'd be a good idea to have him on and kind of straighten this out, because I'm like you, Paul. I'm kind of having a hard time keeping it all straight.
Yeah. Keeping it all straight. I'm not going to call this a senior moment. I've decided not to talk about age that way. And I saw something about somebody has done a study, and I forgot to do this. You're supposed to brush your teeth with the wrong hand, the hand you don't usually use.
Right.
You're supposed to brush your teeth. Then you're supposed to look in the mirror and say, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you, I love you. I can't remember how many times. And then you're supposed to take really exaggerated breaths. Now, besides feeling lightheaded and like I'm going to pass out, I don't remember what any of this stuff is supposed to do. But I'm going to do it anyway. I'm going to do it for a week and see what happens. Maybe I'll be a couple inches taller.
Right.
I don't know.
It's obviously not for memory if you can't remember why you're supposed to do it.
Well, it isn't for memory. Yeah, nothing is for memory, although I try it all. But here's the thing. When you said something about, you're messed up, whatever, I looked at my watch the other day, and I go, oh, man, my watch has stopped. Jeez, well, I don't have time to fool with it. So when I took my watch off to go to bed, I had realized at that point that my watch had not stopped, but I had it on backwards.
You were on metric time.
All day I was thinking, well, I can't rely on my watch, but that's okay because I have my If You Fall watch. Apple will come to your rescue.
You got backups, yeah.
My backup. Very unlike Mr. Wonderful, who is on television a lot now all over the place, not just Shark Tank. And he wears two bazillion-dollar watches on his wrist at all times. But that's not what this is. So anyway, if you think your watch has stopped and the time is wrong, just make sure your watch isn't on backwards.
Right.
Who knew?
Or on your ankle for some reason.
Have you ever worn a watch on your ankle?
I have not, but...
You know people who have?
Well, no, but if we're troubleshooting and putting watches on backward, that could be an option.
Wow. That would be... I mean, that's a... Hang on just a second. Let me check, see what time it is.
You got to be flexible if you do that.
Really? Flexible to do that.
It's a good
that.
Way to pull a hamstring.
You got to be flexible to do relentless positive radio these days, and we are doing that. We promise you we're going to do our best as you're on your way to making each and every day count, because you too know that each day is a gift. We just need to be reminded. And I do want to thank you for choosing to be a part of the best and brightest audience in all of radio. Don't take it from me, although you can, but take it from the Michigan Association of Broadcasters, who have chosen WJR once again to be number one, top of the team, top of the stack, top of the best. WJR, number one. And that congratulations goes from Ann Thomas all the way down. And above, too, Steve Finitari, as I mentioned before, Mike and Jeff, and then all of the people that I can't mention their names. But it's the team, the team, the team. It's the people behind the scenes that you never hear from, never see, never talk to. They make it possible for all of us who are lucky enough to be behind the microphone to do our job. So we appreciate all of them and congratulate all of them as well. You guys will know I don't. We're out of time, but I'm going to ask, do you know what mango is?
The fruit?
No, it's like some kind of a... I'm assuming it, I don't know what it is. It says, Isaac Andic, the billionaire founder of Mango, died in December of 2024 after falling down a cliff while hiking with his son, Jonathan Andic.
I just Googled it because I never heard of it before, but I guess it's some kind of clothing brand or some kind of online clothing shop.
Jonathan Andic, the vice chairman of the board at Mango, the eldest son of Isaac Andic's three children and one of his heirs, is now being investigated as a guy who maybe murdered his father.
Wow.
He's the only witness to his father's death, was arrested in northeastern Spain for allegedly playing a role in his father's death. You know,
wow.
There's a big lesson here. Don't go hiking. It's led to more deaths lately, hasn't it?
That's
and
true.
And a guy tried to throw his wife off the cliff and then bashed her head in. And I mean,
right. And
hiking is clearly not healthy.
Yeah, that is the conclusion here.
Yeah, well, it's not. I didn't say all conclusions were. Right. I just
hey, you've convinced me. I
that's
will not,
my conclusion. I didn't think it would be hard to convince you.
You will not find me hiking.
I didn't think so. 12:15. Now we're already late. Okay. Well, we're going to be just fine together here in Focus on WJR. Tom Leonard is a partner at Plunkett Cooney, former Republican gubernatorial candidate, and we lean on him for interesting questions of the law. Always a pleasure, Tom, having you with us.
Hey, good afternoon, my friend. It's an honor to be back. Thank you.
The Justice Department announced, It is offering $1.776 billion, get it, 1776, to victims of lawfare and weaponization as part of a settlement of a $10 billion lawsuit filed by President Donald Trump and his family against the IRS. Let's find out here, your opinion now. Did the president have cause to have a suit against the Internal Revenue Service?
Well, I think the better question at this point is something like this needed? And I would say yes, Paul W. When you look at the way that these prosecutors and these AGs across the country, and I believe to an extent the Justice Department has been weaponized against, you know, alleged defendants, this is a big problem. And I say look no further than Ryan Kelly and what happened to him here in Michigan a couple years ago. I mean, remember this. This was a man who was charged with a misdemeanor trespassing, never entered the Capitol. And yet dozens of FBI agents show up at his doorstep, guns drawn, wake up his children, drag him out of the house, and charge him with a misdemeanor. I mean, this is the type of stuff that should not happen in America. When I was a prosecutor, if somebody was charged with a misdemeanor, you just simply gave them a courtesy call and said, hey, go check yourself into the to the courthouse. So I think something like this, if it's implemented appropriately, I think this is something that's needed.
Fascinating. Because, of course, the Democrats don't believe it at all. They don't accept it at all. But the fact of the matter is there are a few things that the Trump family is saying was done by the IRS that unfairly tarnished them, their business reputations, and embarrassed them, if I didn't say that, and didn't establish appropriate screening and monitoring systems to prevent the release of their tax releases, which they are not allowed to release to the public.
Correct. And obviously a law was broken because the contractor that did it was not properly overseen, is now spending, I believe, 5 years in prison. So certainly this president had a right to step up and do something. And frankly, I look at this settlement and how much this is needed to combat, the weaponization of the Justice Department. In fact, I made a post on social media this morning. I think the legislature ought to look at doing something like this in Michigan for what Dana Nessel has done to so many families across this state. I mean, Paul W., when I hired in as a prosecutor, the gentleman that hired me in Genesee County, he asked me one simple question. He said, do you know what the most dangerous instrument is in law enforcement or the most dangerous weapon? And I said, the gun. And he said, no. He said, it's the pen. He said, because when you decide to put a pen to paper and you charge somebody with a felony, you have essentially ruined their life. They're going to have a reputation for decades to come. They're going to pay tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees. Their lives are forever going to be changed. He said, you better know that you can get that you can prove all the elements of the crime before you do that. You look at what Dana Nessel did here to these alternate electors. I mean, she couldn't even get this case out of preliminary exam. She couldn't even prove probable cause. Yet you've got about a dozen of our citizens right now that are out tens of thousands of dollars in legal fees. Their reputation's ruined. I think something like this is needed.
And this apparently this is the only thing they could do. There's no other recourse, apparently, is what I guess I'm saying.
No, I mean, I guess, you know, each individual, I guess, could try to sue the government for, you know, abuse of office. But, you know, look at what happened with Rich Baird and Rick Snyder. I mean, because of the immunity laws, it's very difficult to sue a prosecutor or a law enforcement official.
Well, and it should be if everyone's doing things the way they're supposed to do them. When there is allegations of wrongdoing like here, then this is what we end up with. So who will get the money from this 1776, $1.776 billion?
So the Justice Department has not made that clear yet. Everything is still, you know, playing out. They're still putting a process. But essentially, anybody that feels that the Justice Department has been weaponized against them or there's been lawfare against them, they may submit claims. There's going to be a five-person panel that's put in place to review these. I believe four of them are appointed by the Justice Department. One of them is appointed by Congress. But my understanding is that this commission will take these claims and they will determine whether or not this person ought to be compensated because the Justice Department was weaponized against them. And again, this would be money for legal fees. I was talking to Mr. Kelly earlier, and he said he had over $100,000 in legal fees, again, over a trespassing misdemeanor when he never even entered the Capitol.
Wow. Well, obviously, mistakes have been made, and if those mistakes are costly to people, they have every right to seek to be compensated for those errors and those costs that happened here. I want to ask you before we run out of time, I don't know that I've had a chance to. You're a great guy. A lot of people were looking forward to you and your run for governor, but you decided to step away back near the end of April. Any regrets, or are you okay with your decision?
No, listen, I'll tell you just like I've told everybody. Was it the decision that we wanted to make? No, but I 100% know in my heart of hearts it was the right decision. We got to the place where we knew in this era that we live in with social media, theater, and having to go completely negative on all of our opponents, I was going to have to become something I didn't want to be, and frankly, somebody that wasn't true to myself. And I was very clear when I got in the race. My goal was to focus on issues. I wanted to run a campaign that my kids could be proud of. And frankly, Paul W., I think that we did bring some attention to a lot of these issues. I was the one candidate willing to challenge the utilities and bring attention to rising energy costs, these mental health issues. Again, I think we did a great job bringing attention to these issues, but ultimately, I did not want to become the candidate that I said I would never become. I wanted my kids to be proud of their dad, and we have no regrets.
I understand you completely, and I applaud you for that. Not an easy decision to make. Tom Leonard, partner at Plunkett Cooney, former Republican gubernatorial candidate. Thanks for being with us, Thomas, always.
Hey, thank you. We'll see you soon, my friend.
We'll look forward to it. As we continue, Paul W. here, in focus on WJR. As we continue, I always like it when it says 1, 2, 3, 4 on my clock. 12:34. And we welcome a guy we haven't talked to in a while and look forward to talking to all the time. He is, of course, the Macomb County Executive, Mark Hackle. Mark, it's always a pleasure, sir.
It's always a privilege to be on your show, Paul.
Now, I did see you out at the birthday party for Candace Miller, and you were swarmed like you were the celebrity that, in fact, you are.
No, I'm fortunate to be at her party, her events. She's got a great response from the public here in Macomb County. They adore her, so it's great to have you there. Obviously, that says a lot for her. She absolutely loves having you there.
Well,
so,
I love her and everything that she does. I love you, everything that you do. Do people still come up to you and say, "Why didn't you run for governor?"
Yeah, I do get that. In fact, her and I joke back and forth. We keep
she's heard the same thing.
Yeah, and she says, "No, you should have ran." So we go back and forth. We're trying to do good things for Macomb County,
help
the state out in the meantime.
Well, you do help out Macomb County. You live for Macomb County, as does she, and you do help out the great state of Michigan and these United States. And we'll never be able to thank you enough for all that you do. Why is it so confusing to some of us that the Selfridge Air National Guard base in Macomb County seems to keep getting approval for something we thought happened actually a long time ago when our governor was with the president and got in trouble for shaking his hand or hugging him or doing something which was so politically wrong for the people to give her a hard time getting Macomb County what it needed? But why does this keep coming up, saying that the funding's approved and this is that? And wait, I thought this was all done.
Yeah, and so does everybody else. You're spot on. The unfortunate reality is obviously the governor is making a commitment. The president of the United States made a commitment. And sometimes the legislature, they kind of play a little bit of the politics, the posture for other things they want when it comes to budgets. And so that, I think, is where we're at right now. There's kind of a little bit of a stalemate, but I don't believe for a minute that it's not going to get done. I think, Matt Hall, he's doing a great job of trying to get this thing over the line and wants to stay specifically focused on the funding for this this runway project. And we understand that. And I know that Kevin Hertel on the Senate side and Winnie Brinks are, you know, very much interested in making this happen too. They're looking more at how do we use this as part of the overall budget strategy. So they're working together. There's a time crunch. The governor's going to sign off, I think, the minute they bring something to her desk. And, you know, she's shown before that she can be the governor on behalf of the state of Michigan as opposed to the party.
Right.
And, you know, by doing so, she caught a little bit of flack, like you said, standing alongside the president, accepting billions of dollars of fighter jets coming to Selfridge. I mean, how couldn't you two come together to support that? She did the right thing, and so did the president. So
yeah.
I think both sides are just plain politics.
If I could publish the names of those people who gave her a hard time for doing what she did to get what we needed, I would publish those names. There's no chance I'm voting for them anyway, but it just, I mean, it's disgusting. But here's what's more disgusting. You know, the Air Force had previously resisted sending us new fighters to Selfridge. You had to work hard to turn that around. And now the Air Force was overruled by the president. He directed the F-15X mission to Selfridge by 2028. Of course, the base's A-10 Thunderbolt II aircraft, which, by the way, has been called into action recently in good service, and the KC-135 Stratotankers were set to be, or sorry, set to be phased out. Are you telling me, Mark Hackle, there is any chance in hell that this will not go through and Selfridge will not get this?
It's very interesting if you think about it. What you just said totals up to $3.5 billion worth of hardware coming to Selfridge Air Base for the state of Michigan for our nation's defense. $3.5 billion as a result of the decision that the president made and the governor accepted. So I seriously doubt the legislature is going to, you know, I guess, fumble in this particular situation and not come across with the $152 million that is needed to finish this runway project that Candace and I are working on to make sure that they're ready for those planes when they get here. So I doubt it. Again, you know, I'm very optimistic, like I was with the road funding. I knew they were going to get this done. I think it is going to happen. It's just a little more posturing, I guess, on behalf of the parties. And I think that's what we need to set that aside. You know, let's get this moving, get this solidified, because $3.5 billion worth of, you know, hardware coming here, that's a major corporation coming to the state of Michigan. You know, you can't mess that up.
No, I can't imagine being in a position in Lansing, in Michigan government, and screwing up something that's worth $3.5 billion plus, 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 all the pluses
right.
that go with that, right?
Yes, yeah. What it does to the industry, the defense industry, aerospace. I mean, so much more is going to come as a result of this.
Taxes, jobs.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, not to mention that it's going to take us off that, you know, that list of, you know, base realignment and closures, the BRAC studies that we hear, you know, time and again.
We get tired of hearing those year after year.
Correct.
And we thought this was going to relieve us of this constant worry that they're going to close Selfridge down.
And there's nobody that's been a better champion for Selfridge than everyone. I mean, whether it's the chambers, the people that live in and around Selfridge, all of our congressional delegation, you know, the people that are, you know, in and around each one of these municipalities, the industry. There isn't anywhere else in the country where there's such a welcoming atmosphere for these aircraft coming to their bases than we have here at Selfridge Air Base. I mean, even the Air Force will tell you, we have never seen anything like this. People so much celebrating Selfridge Air Base and what happens. And it has an impact on the other installations across the entire state, Grayling, Battle Creek. All of those will have an impact if Selfridge fails. Well, it's not going to fail. I do believe, you know, the fact that we've already got that announcement on behalf of the president and the governor accepting it, this legislature will come together and they will try to find a way of, you know, setting aside the political differences and manage through the budget process as well as this particular item that they need. And that need is $152 million.
There will be hell to pay if these people can't rise above the political games. There will be hell to pay.
Yeah. Yeah, that's why I don't think they'll fail on this.
Okay. All right, well, you tell it like it is. You always have. Macomb County Executive Mark Hackle. And give Swickla my best as well, would you please? He's probably standing right there holding your phone for you.
I was just with him a little while ago. He reminded me, Paul W. is calling. You better not miss that call. I said, I never would. Yeah, never do.
We all need a John Swickla in our lives. And we're all very lucky to have a Mark Hackle in our lives. We'll talk again soon, Mark.
Thank you. Appreciate you, Paul.
Mark Hackle, Macomb County Executive. We all thought this was a done deal. And it will be catastrophic if it doesn't happen. I'm just saying. We continue in focus on WJR, Paul W. Smith, 1243. All righty, we're checking in with Tanya J. Powers, Fox News correspondent extraordinaire, WJR contributor. It's been a while, Tanya. Nice to have you back with us.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
The primary reason is this mosque shooting. There's much more information being released right now about what turned out to be a frantic search for the runaway 17-year-old boy who had disappeared with his mother's guns. And she called the police a couple of hours before this even took place.
Yeah, that is the reason that yesterday when the press conference happened where the police came out and then the San Diego police chief, Scott Wall, gave some information. And one of the things that struck me when he did was he said it took their officers 4 minutes to respond. That is a very fast response time, and the sheer number of them. As he mentioned, dozens of them were there, like, in very, very short order. And one of the reasons was, like you said, the mother of one of these two teens had called police and said, hey, my son has run away. She reported him being suicidal. She said her weapons were missing from the house. Her vehicle was gone. So they already were looking for the vehicle. They actually had used the automated license plate readers to track the car. They had alerted a school where at least one of the teens had been a student to let them know, be on the lookout, watch out what's going on. A couple of hours after she called, like you said, the shooting happened just a few blocks away from their home, as a matter of fact.
This is just very bizarre. I mean, it does show that this illness goes both ways. Oftentimes it's a synagogue. Now here we have with a mosque. Who's out there putting these ideas into kids' heads? And it's got to be, I would presume, through social media. And why is it that social media is able to catch certain things so easily and quickly and not something like this?
That's a good question. We don't yet know what he posted on social media, if anything. We don't have any of that information at this point. I did check a little bit ago to see if there's going to be a press conference that's set up already today to give us more information. As of a few minutes ago, I had not seen a time where they, have set one of those. I would assume whenever they have more information, they will, set one up and let us know what they found. But right now, the investigation is obviously still going on. I mean, the fact that there were three people who were killed, one was a security guard and two others apparently worked at the Islamic Center in San Diego. They were killed in this whole thing. And then, of course, the two teenagers, their bodies were found in a car not very far from the center after all of this happened.
Dead of their self-inflicted wounds. Tanya J. Powers, Fox News correspondent extraordinaire, WJR contributor. Thanks for joining us again.
Sure, anytime.
And by the way, those three people killed, and she mentioned one was a security guard. They're saying that his actions helped minimize the situation, that from the San Diego police chief. And it went on to say, it's fair to say his actions were heroic, and undoubtedly he saved lives today. So this is just, I mean, we don't hear about this happening at mosques very often, but clearly here we have one of those situations. And you just got to wonder, who is reaching out and how are they reaching out to these young people to get them in this frame of mind of suicidal attacks? What, any thoughts on this, Mike?
Yeah, and I don't think it's anyone reaching out to them directly. It's just that it's so hard to keep track of what impressionable teenagers consume and who's influencing them that I'm sure that you just have, these crazy people casting a wide net, and it just it just strikes a chord with certain kids that don't know right from wrong or are susceptible to doing something horrible like this.
Well, what I mean is, if not reaching out, who is broadcasting?
Right.
We see enough. I mean, we see anti-Semitism all around us. We see that. That's easy to find. I don't see a lot of anti-Islamic stuff coming through. Obviously, it's there, but we don't appear to be surrounded by it. Maybe it's because where we live.
Right.
Or what? I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I don't live too far from Dearborn, and I mean, there's a lot of Islamophobia that I'll see around there, but I think you're right. I think it's where we live, you know, there's a big Jewish population, there's a big Muslim population, and there's just people out there who are full of hate and fear, and they spew it because they confuse that with strength when it's really weakness.
It's a terrible weakness. I go through Dearborn rather often, and I'm trying not to be oblivious, but I haven't seen a lot of Islamic phobia in Dearborn. It's the last place I would think I would see it.
Yeah, it's from the people outside of Dearborn who are, you know...
That are uninvited.
Yeah, outside agitators. Remember that term.
Yeah, that's... Unfortunately, they earn that name. We continue here in Focus on this Tuesday afternoon. Paul W. Smith... And the team on WJR. Well, welcome in to hour two of Focus on this Tuesday, the 19th of May. We have decided that without question, the month is going by faster than the week. If that's possible, and I'm sure it isn't. But that's what it feels like, because it's only Tuesday, but it's the 19th of May already. It's just astonishing how quickly it's gone by. We've had several seasons in the last 24 hours. A tremendous rainstorm last night. Winds, I thought a tornado was passing through. We had tornado warnings, not necessarily specifically in our area. And then a major rainstorm, and then sunshine this morning, then a major rainstorm, and now sunshine. I can't figure it out.
I think it's
telling us something. It's telling us that if you have a chance to eat devil's food cake today, you should, because it is National Devil's Food Cake Day.
Wow.
And if the weather's telling us anything, that life is unpredictable, why not go for it?
And then wash it down with some Angel's food cake just to, you know, cover your bases.
Well, you should probably cover both. Yeah. I never thought of that. Yep. Kim sent me a note that says, what is Ozempic personality? Patient shares troubling GLP-1 impact on mental health. I don't doubt it. I'm against all those drugs, even though I'm on Mounjaro because of diabetes. I'm against them all. I think the whole way we approach diabetes is wrong, and nobody cares what I think, but that's what I think, and my job is to tell you what I think through observations. Ay, ay, ay. New York is a dangerous place to live, period.
Mm-hmm.
I don't just say that. I lived there, or as I say, I was sentenced there for 5 years. Woman dies after falling into a hole in Midtown Manhattan.
Wow.
That is just,
yeah.
That's unacceptable on every level.
Yeah, you'd think they would have it blocked off.
Well, somebody's going to learn how expensive that was to not have it blocked off if it wasn't blocked off. And frankly, shame on her if it was blocked off and she said, "Well, I'm going to walk around this."
Right.
You never know. We don't know any details except, sadly, someone has died, which is. Unfortunate and certainly unnecessary for that to happen. We found out about what Manga was, I guess, clothing, and that now his son has been arrested for possibly pushing him off a cliff while they were hiking, which led me to say hiking is clearly unhealthy for you. But that being what it is, company hatches chicks from an artificial eggshell. I'm not even going to delve into that. It's bad enough that they're already saying that men will be unnecessary in the not too distant future because they've come up with synthetic sperm. I don't know if you heard that or not.
No.
But I can say this. You try to get that synthetic sperm to take the garbage out. That's right. All I'll say.
Right. You only got to ask.
Can't get rid of us like.
You only got to ask us 7 times to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Or God forbid mow the lawn, which I haven't done in a long time. Okay. So Pakistan hands the U.S. a revised Iranian proposal for ending the war. What do you know about that?
Just, you know what? It seems like Groundhog's Day, doesn't it? It seems like we hand Iran a plan to end the war through mediators. They hand one back, and we both say, no thanks, and things continue.
It does seem to be simple on our end. You can't use your weapons. I'm under the impression that if they signed off on that, everything else would be, to say,
right,
hunky-dory. I don't know what hunky-dory means. Quick, look it up. Cuba warns U.S. military action would cause bloodbath after drone report. You know what? Please, Cuba, wake up and smell the Cuban roast coffee.
Smell the Maduro.
See, there's just, we don't want to see the bloodbath that would happen if the U.S. attacked Cuba. I've been there. What are they going to fire back 1957 rockets that they have somewhere rusting left over?
Yeah. I mean, I guess it's their only recourse if the United States wants to go in on Cuba like they did Venezuela and Iran. I guess you got to say something, even if you don't have the capability, instead of saying, yeah, OK, go ahead.
Why don't they just work out a deal and make the place livable for the people of Cuba, because it's the people of Cuba that are suffering, not the leaders. They're living a great life. It's the people of Cuba who are suffering. And this is another one of those situations where the leaders of a country don't give a damn about their people, period.
Right.
Anyway, this is bad. I just thought I'd point it out. With all the things we worried about with the hantavirus and all the overblown, this one's not overblown. An American working in the Congo has tested positive for Ebola. And unless we block people coming from the Congo, we're going to get Ebola here.
Right. And I know we have gotten it here in the United States in the past, and we've been able to quell it. But there's obviously some questions about the resources that we have right now with a diminished CDC and all of that, if we are equipped to deal with something like this, like we have been in the past.
Do you remember, how long ago was OJ? I remember it like it was yesterday. I tried to avoid it, but it was like a speeding train. You either get on the story or you got run over.
It's like 92 or 93. That and Princess Diana are like the earliest news stories that I remember from when I was a kid.
I was flying back from one of the auto shows, international auto shows, and we literally flew over the area where she was at that moment dying. We didn't know that.
Wow, how eerie.
But she was crashing or about to crash in this underpass, and we were literally flying over it at that moment.
Wow.
And I'll never forget it. I was picked up, as always, by the great Metro cars at the airport, and the driver said, "What do you think about Princess Di?" And I said, "Well, I like her. I think she's a very likable person." It's kind of an unusual question. He goes, "No, she died."
Wow.
I didn't know. I was up in the air.
Right. She was getting chased by the paparazzi.
Yep.
That's eerie.
But when I ask about O.J. Simpson, it's because there are certain things you remember, and I'll do this quickly. And I remember the former LAPD detective who investigated O.J. Simpson. I think he found the glove.
Yes.
Mark Furman. And he got in trouble when he said, "No, I've never used the N-word." And they immediately pulled out an audio tape of him using the N-word. And that discredited everything else he said.
Right.
And he has passed away. I think he was 74.
74, and I believe he had cancer.
Throat cancer?
Yeah.
Horrible way to go. But Mark Furman, pretty a big figure in the get away with murder trial, he has died. You know, you wondered, I have wondered, whatever happened to all these people? Like, what happened to Marcia Clark?
Right.
I don't know.
I think she writes books.
I think anyone in any of these big cases ends up writing books. All right, we're underway. Hour number two in focus with the team. Mike Parsons, our executive producer. Danielle Mason, queen of the switches. Rich Luzinski, keeping an eye on our WJR traffic and weather first. It's 1:13. What a pleasure and honor it is to welcome back to the Paul W. Smith Focus Show the Chief of Police for the great city of Detroit, Chief Todd Bettison. Chief, nice to catch up with you. How are you, sir?
I feel great, Paul. Always a great day when I can be on your show, sir.
Well, very kind of you to say. We feel the same way about you. You are doing so many things to connect the community, basically to City Hall, meaning you're like bringing City Hall right to the people in their own neighborhood.
Absolutely. Tomorrow, my walk of mile Wednesday, I'll be over northeast Detroit at 2001 Webster Street, the Dove Academy, where we'll kick off at 5:30. I'm going to have a DJ. I'm going to have free food. I'm going to have resources for just the neighbors, and I'm going to get Detroit moving. My police officers, I'm going to have the marching band from have a school marching band there, and we're going to march throughout the neighborhood, and I'm going to stop and engage neighbors on their front porches.
Oh, that is spectacular. I think starting at Renaissance High School, the parking lot took on a block party feel. This is your second or third Walk a Mile Wednesdays, this one in Northeast Detroit, as you mentioned. And in your own words, Chief Todd Bettison, violent crime is going down, but we're also concerned about the quality of life, and we want you to be able to reach out and touch us. I don't want to be the chief that just sits in the office. And I just a little while ago spoke to Oakland County Sheriff Michael Bouchard about some other issues, and we talked about you, and he's thrilled with you and the way that you guys can work together so well.
Absolutely. Sheriff Bouchard, it's amazing. And just the connection between Wayne County, Oakland County, the city of Detroit, the suburbs, you know, I'll reach out and phone a friend. And so when we have big, large events, when the Pistons are, you know, in the playoffs and when the Lions are down at Ford Field and, you know, everybody, regardless of your city, everybody is a Detroiter coming down to enjoy the games. The common goal that we have is to keep everyone safe. And so I reached out to Sheriff Bouchard and said, hey, man, why don't you send me a couple of those sheriff deputies from Oakland County? And he did. He sent me 25 of them. And he actually came downtown Detroit in uniform and was walking around Ford Field. How do you like that?
Well, God bless him and God bless you. I'll tell you, you guys are facing things we never really thought about, or at least we lay people didn't think about. You guys were probably ready, but you've stepped up patrols following the shooting of a teenager downtown Detroit during one of those so-called teen takeovers. What the heck is going on? And in fact, front page of the Detroit News today, teen violence challenges Detroit. Mass brawl, shooting crimes, month after city unveils safety plan. This is like crazy what's happening with these kids. I know you have a plan. I know the city plans to invest in youth.
Absolutely. This is a national trend. And so for a lot of folks in the Metro Detroit area, kind of caught them off guard. So I've been tracking this for a while. But if you Google or look at teen takeovers, you know, they've had issues in Washington, D.C., Chicago, Philadelphia, Memphis. It's a trend. They're seeing it on Instagram. It's on that algorithm. And so now it started to pop up here in the city of Detroit. But I tell you one thing, you know, we're going to work on finding activities for our teens to do. And the vast majority of teens that did come downtown, they were peaceful. They just wanted to see what was happening, be a part of the excitement. But it was 1-2% that had nefarious, violent intent. And we are addressing those, and we have an excellent police department that identifies individuals like that. I'm going to hold everybody accountable that commits crime, creates a disorderly environment. And for the individual that shot that 14-year-old, He's 17, and now he's facing a whole host of charges because we caught him within 45 minutes of him committing that act. So the message is, if you come downtown, city of Detroit, and you're committing violent acts and you're creating an environment that disturbs the peace, you're going to be detained. You'll be arrested. You will be issued ordinance violations. And if you're a juvenile, I'm going after your parents, too. They're going to be accountable as well.
Bad behavior will not be tolerated, and those that cause it will be held accountable, period.
Period. Absolutely.
Now, when the downtown area, and we were late to this because you're right, these teen takeovers, which kind of was a head-scratcher initially, happening all over the country. But to have 60 kids come downtown, not everyone was looking for trouble, but to have 60 kids coming downtown, this is a product of our media now, our social media, our online communication. This never would have happened this way without social media. At least that's my best opinion.
Paul W., you're so right. You know, with the pop-ups, and, you know, an individual can put out a flyer and can communicate that to thousands of people. And, you know, you could have a large gathering very quickly. But like I said, we're ready. I got a real-time crime center. I have folks monitoring social media. They're scrubbing social media. And I have officers that are deployed. Some things I can talk about, other things I can't talk about. But guess what? We'll be ready. And we're going to ensure that we maintain a safe downtown and a safe neighborhood, because it's not just downtown. We've had pop-ups at various parks, and it's a suburban problem as well. The teens have popped up in Livonia, the urban air, and other places. And so anytime you have large groups of teenagers that are unsupervised, that's the thing. When they're unsupervised, at that point, they can become mischievous and create a dangerous environment for themselves. So my message to parents, have a conversation, because this is not just a Detroit problem. We have teenagers coming from Bloomfield Hills, Farmington Hills. It may be your teenager. Have a conversation with them and say, are you aware of a teen takeover? Or do you plan on going? And stop them from going. Because all of our kids are curious, and they want to be where the excitement and where the action is. But in large groups, when they're unsupervised, it becomes problematic.
Well, it does. And you've made the point that parents in some of these circumstances and cases are going to be held accountable. They're going to be responsible for their kids. And Prosecutor Worthy just told us recently, and I saw her say it on television, too, that, you know, unfortunately, when the summer comes, when it heats up and it's dark, we can have more trouble with kids. But I know you're ready for that, Chief.
Absolutely. Like I said, Saturday night, I detained 60 kids. And when their parents came to pick them up, you know, they were issued parental responsibility tickets. And now they have to go to 36th District Court before Chief Judge McConico. And he's personally hearing all of those cases. He's holding the parents accountable. And if the parents don't show, they'll be issued a bench warrant for their arrest. So pretty soon you'll see me arresting parents.
Wow. Well, Chief, you've reminded us there's a 10 p.m. curfew for everyone 15 and under. That curfew extends to 11 p.m. for 16 and 17-year-olds. And Detroit police are going to continue to enforce those curfews, as well you should, and you're going to.
Absolutely.
Anything else we need to know, Chief, before we let you go back to work?
You know, I would just say that the vast majority of our teens are good kids, and I just want to stress that it's only a few that really cause the problems, and with adults as well. And so I got some children like adults, too, and when they come down with misbehavior, it's not just limited to teens. I'm gonna take care of them as well, so... I want to create a safe environment for everybody to enjoy our beautiful downtown, Paul W., and that's what we do, and we're going to continue doing that.
Well, God bless you with tomorrow's Walk a Mile Wednesday, yet another one in Northeast Detroit, connecting the community to City Hall. They come right to you in your neighborhoods, and we appreciate that kind of very successful policing that you've headed up Detroit Chief of Police Todd Bettison. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Paul W.
Any way, any time that we can help you, please don't hesitate. We continue in Focus on WJR. Well, it is WJR's Tim McGraw VIP Experience, your chance to rock when country music legend Tim McGraw brings his Pawn Show Guitar Tour to Pine Knob Music Theater August 28th. You can win a pair of premium pavilion tickets, transportation courtesy of the great Metro Cars, and $100 to Fabulous Buddy's Pizza. To enter, download the free WJR mobile app. Find the secret word, and then text it to 800-859-0957. Find the secret keyword, text it to 800-859-0957. For more information, visit WJR.com. Well, I mentioned a little while ago that we have a problem ahead of us far worse than the way the media went crazy on the hantavirus. An American doctor working in the Democratic Republic of Congo positive as a growing outbreak raises global concern. WJR's the latest on what health officials are saying about the situation. Marie.
Hi there, Paul. So the Center for Disease Control and Prevention says this doctor, identified by a missionary group as Dr. Peter Stafford, is receiving treatment this afternoon in Germany. Stafford was exposed while treating patients at a hospital in the northeastern city of Bunia. And his wife is also a doctor. They were all potentially exposed, but they're not showing symptoms and remain under strict quarantine. We're talking now about his wife and another doctor. The World Health Organization declaring the situation a global health emergency, and you'll understand why when you hear these numbers. The outbreak has already claimed 131 lives in the Congo, another one in Uganda, but there are 500 cases suspected so far, but health officials say they think that number is lower than it actually is. Health officials say this virus is rare, this strain, particular strain. It has no approved vaccine or a specific treatment. The outbreak began in late April. It has spread rapidly, and it's fueled in part by population movement and ongoing instability right in that area. Ebola spreads through direct contact with bodily fluids. That's why these doctors were put in danger. Fatality rates right now can range widely, but the average, it's just about 50%, Paul.
Which is why I said earlier, this is way worse than the big kerfuffle put up by the news media regarding hantavirus. And yet I'm hearing nothing now across. I watched all the different television networks. They had stories every 5 minutes about the hantavirus. I don't know why, when it certainly appears that Ebola is a far dangerous threat and more likely that we might encounter it.
Yeah, the CDC also says that six other have been exposed and they're being monitored or even evacuated as they're trying to contain all this. So there are Americans involved in all this. I think the reason that maybe the news media took off on that other story was the fact that that occurred on a cruise ship and that it was sailing around and that people, you know, that there were exposures perhaps in other ways other than just having to travel to Africa, which would be the case for the Ebola.
That's the problem. How many people have come from Africa since we even started this story?
Exactly.
That's the problem. That's
exactly what I was going to mention, was that air travel being what it is, and travel being what it is, we had friends that were in Africa just last fall. So a big group of friends who were in Africa last fall. So this is not uncommon to travel there for vacation and for adventure or anything like that, business. So, yeah, I'm in agreement with you. It's interesting that this has a lot of exposure.
The other annoying thing, Marie Osborne, WJR's Director of Community Affairs and News, the other annoying thing is, even on this radio station, I heard people saying, well, you know, ships have rats and they have trouble. It didn't come from a rat on a ship. It came from people who were on a bird watching expedition at a dump, at a trash dump. Mm-hmm. Not particularly a healthy place, the hantavirus. And of course, there were plenty of rats there. And that's where they figured they picked up the hantavirus. So, But then people like to play it up like it was because they were on a cruise ship. No, they were stuck on a cruise ship with people who had it, which is never going to be a pretty situation.
Yeah, anyway. I think you're exactly right about that. But we are here with the story right now. So, and you know, I know we had somebody on the air yesterday to talk about this Ebola, and it was a doctor from Corwell, and they said, look, to panic over at all, just be aware of it so that you understand, especially if you're planning a trip or, you know, on someone who's been there, you need to know that.
Well, okay. I hope there's been a lot of questions. Caitlin Buss asked, are we ready for the next epidemic or pandemic? No, we're not. And I hope it isn't Ebola. That's all I'll say.
Yeah, let's hope so. Well, and then I just want to reiterate this particular strain is very rare, and there's no vaccine or specific treatment for this.
And how many people have died from it?
Right now, 131. In the Congo, there was an additional death in Uganda. But the issue here are all these other cases, people that were exposed. They say it's 500, but people on the ground on this one say it's got to be more than that. You know, you're talking about people that don't report that they're ill. So they think that number of 500 is kind of on the low side.
Yikes. Already a big problem. Marie Osborne bringing it to our attention, unlike a lot of news media people who I haven't heard a thing from on this. Marie Osborne, thank you. Always a pleasure.
Thank you.
We continue in Focus on WJR. Jeff Sharp is the managing partner at Estate Planning Legal Services PC, brand new partner of Focus with Paul W. Smith. He's been practicing law over 25 years, specializing in estate planning, business planning, and special needs planning. He attended MSU, Michigan State University, receiving a Bachelor of Arts, and received his law degree from the then Detroit College of Law, which is now Michigan State University College of Law. And it's a pleasure to meet you and have you on board here, Jeff. Thanks for coming.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
You know, the first thing I want to say is what I say in the commercial. There are a lot of people, myself included, who grew up with not a lot of anything. And we always thought that trusts were for rich people. We've now learned that a revocable living trust is something important for any of us who've worked very hard to accumulate anything.
That is so true. Everyone works hard their whole lifetime and they want to pass things to their family, the last thing they need is probate. Probate is bad because probate takes time. It's public record so everyone can see what your life is and was. Plus, it costs money. The AARP suggests that probate costs 5% of the value of your estate. People can avoid that with a trust.
Imagine avoiding a bill of 5% on everything you worked your entire life to create, to accumulate, and have, and knowing that 5% or more is going to be taken away from the family you want to leave it to. That should motivate everyone, Jeff, to look into this idea of having a revocable living trust. And it's not difficult. It sounds complicated, but you guys make it much easier than one would guess.
It does sound daunting, that I would agree, but when we have a chance to sit and meet with you, we try and explain how everything works, what all the moving parts are, and really it comes down to the who, the what, and the when, who you want to receive assets, what you want them to receive, and when should they receive the assets, and we can make it just that simple for everybody.
And I should make it clear that Estate Planning Legal Services PC, though we talk very much about the revocable living, really is the tip of the iceberg for people's needs for probate and estate planning, because yes, you do durable powers of attorney for financial assets and medical issues, personal property allocations, asset transfers, advanced planning documentation. You do all of that.
Yeah, that's part of the estate plan. One of the things I think that we pride ourselves upon is being able to sit down with individuals and discuss what really their needs are, what their goals and wishes are, and how can we best meet those wishes and goals through an estate plan. And so a comprehensive estate plan can definitely include, and probably should, the trust, the powers of attorney, and even a will. believe it or not.
Well, I believe it. And I just want you to reiterate how an estate plan protects us and our heirs and why there, in fact, is a need for an estate plan. You don't have to be a millionaire. You just have to be somebody who's worked hard all your life.
Absolutely correct. You really don't need to be a millionaire. In fact, really everybody needs some sort of estate plan. It really, what it comes down to is control. If you don't have an estate plan, you're letting the state of Michigan decide what you want from your estate planning wishes are. And for most people, the state of Michigan doesn't quite meet your criteria. So by having an estate plan, you get that control. You can control who's in charge, control who's receiving your assets, who's making decisions for you if you cannot for yourself. So I really think it's imperative because you want the right people in the right positions.
Why don't you, you did a little right there, but would you go over maybe for the peace of mind that we're offering people, the six major reasons why people of modest all the way to substantial means should establish an estate plan, starting for, we already know, privacy for self and family, substantial cost savings. What are some of the others again?
Well, I think some of the others are you get to have, again, that control over who's making decisions.
Greater control of your assets. Okay.
Absolutely. Who's going to make decisions for you? You maybe have people fighting about who's going to make medical decisions for you, and some people may have their own beliefs which don't meet your criteria for that. In addition, you get to control when your recipients receive their assets. If you have minor children or maybe children with special needs, you need to be able to protect them. So you're really protecting your family from others as well as the government agencies. On top of that, probate's not just at the time of your death, it's the powers of attorney, the financial and the medical. And so we want to make sure that we're avoiding probate during your lifetime, avoiding the need for that guardianship and that conservatorship. And once we have all these documents in place, we're not done yet. We need to be able to transfer your assets into the trust to avoid probate. So that's another big part of the equation. So, I mean, amongst all those things, we want to make sure that we have all these in place so that you are protected as well as your family.
All right. Well, we are having some technical difficulties, but that was Jeff Sharp, Managing Partner, Estate Planning Legal Services. Jeff, it's great to have you on board, not only for your expertise, but as a partner on Focus with Paul W. Smith.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
And Paul will be back tomorrow. We will reconnect all the wires. Stay tuned for JR Afternoon with Ryan Armani. What does Paul say? Regards.